Magic,
and the world of illusion.
Magic TV
and Craig Petty proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
Welcome back to Magic TV. My name's Craig. It's 9 o'clock, which means it's time for a Talk Magic. And today I am interviewing somebody I've been wanting to interview for a long time. This person has been on my bucket list of people to speak to. Never spoken to before this interview, but I've worked with him. That kind of sounds weird, right? Well, this young man is one of the top creators in the country, as far as I'm concerned. I had the honor of working with him on a project that he created, which was brilliant. And I'm aware of several things that are going to be coming out in the next sort of 6 to 18 months. And mark my words, his name is just going to go through the roof. Some of the biggest and best tricks that are going to be released to the magic community are going to have his name on it. You've heard of him, I'm sure you have, but let's introduce him. I am, of course, talking about the creative powerhouse himself, the one and only Mr. Andrew Niner. How are you doing, Andrew?
I'm good. Some people, I should just clarify, some people know me as Andrew Niner. Some people know me as Joshua J. There's a little bit of mix up there.
Well, there is a similarity, but you don't sound like Kermit the Frog. So
I don't sound like Kermit the Frog. No, a little bit more Miss Piggy, but.
But yeah, you know what? It's great to have you on the channel. And
great to be here.
It's been a long time coming. Thank you for finding time to do this. And
absolutely.
Yeah, man, you came onto my radar shortly before I had a phone call from Penguin saying, will you work on the boombox? And since then, your name is everywhere. Like every couple of days, someone, I can't have a conversation with people without somebody saying, Andrew Niner, Andrew Niner. You're like everywhere, which is always a good sign, right? I mean, you must be very happy with your standing within the community right now.
I'd like to think so. Yeah, I'm very excited to be in a position where I am with working with some of the coolest people ever. My passion is literally just making stuff for this art. I'm a creator. I'm a tinkerer. I love creating. So being able to create for people and share things and do a little bit of consultant things, it's awesome because you get to work on. A lot of times you're working on your own ideas and producing them, which is awesome because you get to have this idea, you write it down on a piece of paper, and then you see it produced. Like, that is the coolest thing ever. But a lot of times when other people have their ideas you get to work on, you get to take an idea from great to better and just help that person propel it and be something that is just amazing. So that is such a rewarding feeling, seeing something being released or being done by someone else that has taken months of refining and such. That's always a fun feeling. But yeah, I love the people I work with. It's the perfect job. Nobody could ask for a better job.
That's very true. Absolutely. So I want to talk all about what you've done, how you got into magic. I also want to talk about creativity and maybe get some advice from you, because there's a lot of people that are going to be watching this that are wanting to be doing the same sort of thing as you. But before we get there, let's give people who haven't heard of you a bit of a frame of reference. And Andrew, the first thing I'd like to do is ask you about your journey into magic, your origin story, how you got started. So how old are you right now? And when did you get into magic?
So I'm 19. I got into magic. I wish I started counting. I think I was about six, around six, maybe a little bit earlier. And it started with my dad. He was a kids performer. He did shows. He did ventriloquism. He was a magician. And he started when he was younger than I am now and did that all the way through when he had me for however long that was. And so I got to grow up going to his shows and going to a lot of school functions where he performed. And I just remember sitting in the crowd and like looking up at him and just, I was as amazed as the kids around me, and I was even more so impressed because he was my dad. None of the other kids could say that. But Yeah, it started when he, I always loved watching him perform, but one day he, what was it? He did one new piece in the show, and I remember going up after and going, "How does that work?" And he wouldn't tell me. He would be like, "Oh, I'll tell you when I'm older." And that was it. It was like, okay, that's my life is devoted to figuring out how this works. And then around my 6th birthday or somewhere around there, he showed me how it worked. And it's funny, a lot of people say when they figure a method out or someone teaches them a magic trick, it's like, oh, that's cool. Kind of ruins the trick for me. And it was the complete opposite with me. I grew up loving puzzles. So when I saw how it worked, the answer to the puzzle, my brain exploded and I wanted to learn everything else and be able to do that and pursue that. So he taught me a few card tricks. He had the Mark Wilson Encyclopedia of Magic book. So I consumed that. And yeah, it's never ended, unfortunately. So
Wow.
that's
Wow.
kind of how I started.
So were you did you ever kind of want to go? Because obviously, and we'll talk about this, you're a creator primarily. And you're not so much of a performer, more of a creator than a performer.
Yeah.
When was that a conscious decision earlier on? Did you ever get to a point where you're thinking, you know what, I'd like to follow in my father's footsteps. I'd like to perform in front of people. I'd like to be a kid show entertainer. I'd like to be a performer. Or was it always kind of, you know what, it's the creativity side of things that fascinates me?
It's a good question. I didn't really know there was a difference early on. Like I thought every magician did the same thing. Every magician learned magic and then performed it. I guess I didn't really grasp the fact that, oh yeah, there are people who do this as their normal job. This is normal. And then as I kind of got older, I realized like, oh yeah, I can make money doing this. This is something I could pursue. And I did a little bit, and I've worked gigs and done that before. And I love it. And that's the sole reason I do what I do is to see a smile on someone's face. I mean, that's the most rewarding thing in the world. I was given this gift of impossibility and wonder as a child. So going out and being able to give that to other people is solely what I do. That being said, I find performing is incredibly rewarding, but so is creating. And so I find most of my time is spent creating. It's just like I could go out and full-time perform, but then I wouldn't have the time to create. So there's a balance, and I do 100% want to get back into that. But yeah, as I kind of got older, I realized, oh, you can create your own stuff, and oh, you can like you don't just have to like buy a magic trick and do it. Like you can make your own things. That's awesome. And then it just kind of that yeah, my kind of veered that direction and kind of stayed that direction. Yeah, that's kind of how that happened.
That's very cool. Okay. And when did you so you got into it when you were six? Did you start to
Yeah.
get into it kind of seriously at that point where you're like reading books and watching DVDs, downloads, buying tricks, or what
Oh
was
yeah.
earlier in life that that happened?
Yeah, it's funny. I don't remember exactly, but probably around the age of 10, maybe like 6 to 10, I was reading books and kind of just getting a very basic of the craft and doing a few card tricks. I think the first card trick I learned was Out of This World. Just like really simple, really, really minimal sleight of hand type stuff. And then one day I found this place called penguinmagic.com, and the amount of money I spent with them, it's sad to be honest, over the lectures and things. Yeah, Penguin's great, especially in their early days when they were doing the lectures more regularly. It was really, really, really beneficial to my foundation, I think. Being able to watch a lecture and not necessarily watch it for the tricks, that was definitely why that was being watched, but the talks in the lecture and the things and the tips that the performer gave were things that I didn't know. So watching those gave me that ability to pick up those tips I wouldn't have otherwise found. So lectures, even the Murphy's at the Table were great. Those were amazing. Yeah, so loved the lectures, and I started just watching one after another. And I think after that is when I started getting really serious about, oh, okay, I should probably learn some really serious stuff and start to create. I think was it I think Shin Lim's At the Table was one that really stuck out to me with DIY stuff. If you, even if you're an experienced DIYer and you have not watched that lecture, please go back and watch it because it's gold. It's like $7 and it's gold. The stuff he shares, the methods for building things are just incredible. So that was huge for me. And then I started getting into the more DIY stuff, like, oh, I don't have to use a deck of cards to create a magic trick. I can put anything I want together. So yeah, that was kind of what the earlier side of my creativity looked like.
Okay. And what was your, I know you talk about giving back to the community, which is so admirable. What was your original sort of inspiration for creating? Was it, hey, I just have this bug that I want to, or this itch that I want to scratch? Or was it, hey, you know what? I could make money from doing this. If I create something that's good, I could make another income from here. Like, what point did you start creating and what was your reasoning behind it?
I don't know. That's the short cool. answer. It's definitely not for money. That's never going to be the reason, because if I wanted to make money, I would not be a magician. But that being said, my mindset now is just, I love giving back to the community. So being able to create things and release it, hey, it may not be for everybody, but if it benefits one or two people, that's enough for me. Seriously. So being able to release something and release ideas that are solutions for other performers is what I love doing. Early on, I really don't know, and I wish I did. I think it was probably a combination of my family being very artsy crafty and me just applying that to my art. I started out with a lot of gimmicks and really, really, really bad gimmicks. I came across a flap card I made the other day and it's about 17 cards thick. So like really poorly made gaffes. And then I started honing it and learning a little more of the nuances of how to make things good. And then, and then I started just having ideas. I don't know, I would just take the ideas and kind of jot them down and play with them. Sometimes they were good, sometimes they weren't, but yeah, and then one thing led to another. You'd kind of create this whole trick, so to speak, and then you'd kind of mess with it, perform it. Some are good, some aren't. That's just how you create. That's how I started. I know there's the answer's no. I don't remember how, and I wish I did. But
I mean, that's cool. That's cool. It's great to know your journey. And were you creating to go and perform this stuff to other people, or when was your first marketed trick? When was the first thing that you thought, you know what, I could actually go out and sell this to magicians? And I know it's not about the money, but as a creator, there's something really cool about knowing that there's going to be somebody in another part of the world that you've never been to and you probably never will be to, that go to, that's out there getting incredible reactions because of something that you developed, and you're helping them. You know, the trick then extends beyond just you performing it to hundreds of people performing it worldwide. That's one of my reasons for, releasing magic to the community. So when was the first trick that you released, and how did that come to be?
Good question. The first trick would have been Boombox. Officially launched was Boombox. That was a trick on Penguin about two years ago? No, about a year ago. It was a year ago.
Man, that's talk about a big hitter to start with. I mean, if you're going to bring out your very first trick, why not bring out one that like everyone considers to be one of the tricks of the year with the largest magic shop in the world? I mean,
I still remember the email I got back. I think it was like 4 hours after I sent that in, which I'm now told, looking back on it, is ridiculous. Like, no, you send something to a company and they just kind of, it goes in a bin and they sort through the bin. And it was like, so for something to come back within 4 hours is crazy. So let me get to that question in just a moment. Mm-hmm. Preface this by saying the first part of the question, I'm blanking on it, but it was something about the community. Why I release magic? I'm relatively new to the magic community. I grew up not realizing that was something that existed, so to speak.
Oh, wow.
So I had my community, and it started on Discord, believe it or not. So I grew up, I guess, kind of sheltered from that. I didn't really know that existed. So I found this group on Discord, and I cannot recommend them enough because just the group of people, it was a large group, it was like 300 people, but that group of people helped me develop my skills and helped me develop as a performer. I think that was about a four, probably about a 3 year period I was with them. And
Nice.
then someone was like, "Hey, you should join Facebook." And my first thought was, "I'm not giving Zuckerberg my money." I don't, that was never a thought. I was like, "Nope, that's not happening." And then no, they were like, "No, you really should join. There's a lot of the magic community on Facebook and Instagram are great." So I was like, "Okay, I'll give it a go." Best decision of my life. Being able to interact with so many cool people, and I've made lifelong friends that I would have otherwise have not. And then being introduced to the actual community and going, "Oh, there's a lot more people in this community than a very small whatever." Like I knew that existed, but not in a confined group. So once that started happening, it was awesome. So that leads into a lot of this stuff. The reason this is my first marketed thing is I just gave a lot of it out for free. Like if somebody needed help with something, I would create something for them and just give it to them. Or if it was a consulting job, I charged for that. But it wasn't like, "Oh, I'm gonna create the next big magic trick, release it, and make millions of dollars." That never has crossed my mind. So it kind of was, it was a backhanded thing to release Boombox, and it's all David Jonathan's fault. You can blame him. It's his fault, 100%. I met David at a convention, having just purchased one of his downloads, not knowing who he was. So I purchased his download and I watch it. It was his Uno download. I watched it and I performed it at the local magic meeting, and I was like, "Oh, this is really cool. He's a great creator." And then I'm at this magic convention, and I'm standing at this table doing some stuff, and I look over to my right, and standing next to me is David Jonathan, and I look up and go, "I know you. I just bought your trick. How's it going?" And that started a fast long friendship. And I showed him Boombox that night, the first prototype. I had created it a few months prior. This was back in like 2019, I think. But anyways, he loved it, and a few other people I showed loved it, and they were like, "You should release this. This should be a trick that people buy." And I'm like, "Really? It's just an idea." So I sent it to Penguin, and I was like, "Hey, here's a thing I created. A lot of people love it. Let me know what you think." And I honestly kind of forgot about it. It was just something I did. And then those 4 hours passed, and I get an email. I think I saw it the next day, and Sean was like, "Hey, we love this. Can we set a call up?" And the team loved it, and then that rolled into production. So thank you, David. That is entirely your doing.
Wow.
But yeah, that's how that happened. That's how that all got started.
So I have many questions. So the first question is, Boombox is a big success. And I was saying to you just off camera, and this is a testament to you and what Penguin thought of your trick. They don't get me involved in everything. Like they come and knock it on my door about a project if they really believe in it. And it's like, hey, they rang me up and it was like, we really want you to work on this boombox. We want you to come up with a bunch of routines. And I saw it and immediately fell in love with it. Like it was incredible. I'm so proud to be a part of the project. I really am. And you're a genius. You really are. I use it in every gig. But off the back of that, off the back of the success of Boombox, I know you've got multiple things coming up. What did you have a strategy like? Okay, so I've now got a name out there. Penguin have had Boombox come out. Suddenly I'm everywhere. Everyone knows about me. Like, what was the plan? I know you said before, I know it's not about money. I know it's not, but like you obviously wanted to capitalize on the success of Boombox. Where did you think, right, okay, I'm going to use this to approach other companies. I'm going to go back to Penguin. I've proved that I've got, you know, what was your thought process after Boombox came out from there to when you are where you are right here now?
That's a good question. I think a lot of the stuff I create never sees the light of day. They're personal. I consider them personal projects because they're not anything I think is worthy of being performed, but it is a fun thing to work on. It exercises different skill sets. So if something is worthy of being released, it has to get through that first process before it's ever shown to anybody to even be considered something that will be released. Because I have a lot of ideas, and like I've said before, not all of them are good. And even the ones I consider good are not always good. So that whole process happens. And if I think something's really, really good, then it gets shown to a few close friends. And if they think it's good, and if other people like, if it's something that is generally liked, then it will be sent. Because I feel like the industry has a problem where people come up with an idea and then release it as a trick, which is good for them. Like, no hate on anybody. That's awesome. I think it's so cool that people are able to do that. The problem is there's pros and cons. You dilute the community with things that, like, do they really need to be there on release? I consider these tricks lecture tricks. They're things that would do really, really well in a lecture, but they're not necessarily things that need to be a their own release. So it kind of dilutes the market a little bit. On the other hand, you now have a humongous database for methods. So if you need, like, oh man, I need a way to be able to make a bag of jelly beans appear on stage with sleeves rolled up, there's probably a trick out there that can do that. So that's a pro. So I try my hardest not to just release every idea or even work on every idea as if it is a release. It's only the stuff that I think is really good. And then if I think it's good, it is kind of stepped down that decision-making process. And we can talk about, if you want, in a bit, like what my process is for that, for how I develop and how I document my
Yes,
ideas.
please. There we go.
But yeah, so once to touch on your question where future projects are going, there's a few with Penguin that there's a few projects I'm working on that are Penguin specific, meaning they can't really be done anywhere, release anywhere besides Penguin, if that makes sense. But I would love the chance to be able to work with most companies at least once, because I've met some awesome people at Penguin, and I'd love to see what other people have to offer. Like in terms of people I get to know, because it's always fun. So that's, yeah, I'm kind of whatever. If people like my stuff, then it's maybe it'll be put out. But otherwise, it's really just the people interaction that I love. I met so many cool people. I met you through Penguin. So, like, there's a testimony of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Penguin are amazing. Okay. And one more question before we talk about your creative process, because this whole thing is fascinating. And I think a lot of people that are new into magic and wanting to become creators, I think they're going to find this whole story very inspiring. Do you have any? Okay. So you're right. When you got an email back from Sean in 4 hours, that's unheard of, like completely unheard of. You don't get that. You did. So, do you have any advice on pitching a product to a company? Because when you pitched Penguin, you were kind of unknown by Penguin. If you asked Penguin before you sent the email, hey, do you know who Angelina is? They probably would have said no. So,
Which is 100% true.
but then you put them into a situation where they were like, hang on, we need to work with Andrew. We really do. So, what advice have you got when it comes to pitching a product? And is there a particular reason you went with Penguin? Do you have any advice on which company to go for? I know you said you wanted to work with all of them, but somebody's watching this. They've got a trick. They think it's a really good trick. They want to work with a company on this trick. What company should they work for or go to? And how does it look in terms of pitching that product?
What company? That is a tough question, and it is 100% up to the individual and their preferences and the company. One company may see something and absolutely love it. Another company may look at it and think it's not worth replying to. So if you are out there and you have pitched something and you got a no, or that person responded or didn't respond, you never got a response, please don't let that deter you from putting magic out. Because it's a sad reality that you have to realize that the person who's in charge of responding to your email or DM or message, number one, hasn't seen it because they get thousands a day, most likely. Or number two, they don't have the time to respond, or they just can't, you know, it doesn't mean it's a bad trick, right? At the end of the day, a company is a company and they have to make a profit. So when they look at a trick, they have to see it and go, yes, it's a great trick. Yes, it's viable for us to produce. Yes, we'll make a profit off of this, right? You could have the coolest idea that uses the craziest new technology built into a card box. But at the end of the day, nobody's going to produce it because they're making 5 cents on the product and the product costs $550. Like, they're just, that's not something they're going to do. So keep that in mind if you are pitching, if you have, if you've not, if you're looking to do that. Just because one individual says it's not good does not mean that it is not good. I've seen tricks that people say are not good, and I look at them and they're in my performance. Like, I do them all the time, right? So first off, that's one. Number two, there's a little bit, it's weird. Each magic company has their own flavor, so to speak. I can't explain it, but you say Penguin, you think of a certain type of trick. If you were to see a trick, you could probably categorize, if you've been in the community a little bit, like, oh, this is a Penguin trick, or oh, this is a Vanishing trick, right? Something that Vanishing Ink would sell. That's kind of how that works. You kind of have to see it out. The other option is you just pitch it to all of them, and whoever gives you the best deal or whoever makes you the best offer, you go with them. I don't recommend that because you have to be able to work with people. Not every company treats you the same, so to speak. I've had a very positive experience with Penguin, but not everybody has that good of an experience with other companies. So there's a little bit of trying to figure that out so you don't, the creator, get ripped off. Because I've heard horror stories of tricks that, like, production was great, the trick is great, but it was a pain to get there, and nobody ever wants to do that. So it's a little bit of both. It's a little bit of feeling out, number one, what kind of trick it is, what, and I don't mean if it's a card trick or stage trick. It's, if you go on to Vanishing Ink or Penguin Magic and you look at their top 20 best time sellers of all time, compare your trick to that. Kind of see if it fits in that. Imagine what it would look like with a Penguin trailer and a Penguin logo. Like, would it fit? Where would it fit? As for me, when I marketed it, when I sent the email to Penguin, it was just, I think I, at the time, used Penguin the most, so that's just who I just pitched it to. I had a little bit of correspondence with some of the people at Penguin, so I wouldn't say I was known, but that was kind of a little bit swaying it, but that was kind of it.
Fantastic. Amazing. Okay. And how does, this is the big question, how does your creative process work? This is something that I get asked on this channel more than anything else. How can I create a magic trick? Whether that be for their own act, because they're wanting to do something unique, or whether that be to ultimately market something, everybody wants to be a creator. So as somebody who is kind of identifying more of a creator as a than as a performer, and you gravitate more towards that side of the industry, can you give anybody who's watching this any advice on creativity and the process behind it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a mindset. I'll start with that. It's not something that you can just do. You can't sit down and just create. Some people can, but it is, for me at least, it's a mindset. It's something that has to be trained and has to be worked on. And that's not to say you're never going to have a good idea without that, but it helps, because every idea you have is something that can be worked on, right? So my process, number one, is you almost have to relearn how you see things, right? I'm looking at things in a different way of how can that be used in a manner that is not expected, right? I guess that sums it up, right? You look at something and you say, oh, that would be a really cool method for something. You have to start seeing methods in reality, which sounds weird, but it won't sound weird when you're out eating and you look over and you see something that goes, oh, that's brilliant. One example of this was, we were out eating and there was a dividing wall to the kitchen. There was a little base, and then they had the pegs that came up to the ceiling. And where I was sitting, I watched somebody walk behind that wall. I could see them through the lattice and disappear. It's the weirdest thing I've ever seen. They just disappeared. And after the meal, I got up and went over to look. And there were two walls. One was in front of the other. And this one perfectly masked behind one of the poles, right where I was sitting, the second wall. So he just walked behind that second wall and disappeared, right? So things like that. See methods in reality. Try and see those things. And it will amp up your creativity tenfold. Once that starts happening, write every single idea you have down. I am not kidding. If it's the dumbest, littlest, tiniest idea, write it down. I didn't used to do that. It used to be, if I thought it was good, it would get written down and then it'd be worked on. But absolutely write every thought that comes into your head down. If it's an idea like, oh, that would be something cool. Even if it's a one sentence thing, it's jotted down. That's it. That's how that works. And then I can talk about how that, like how I categorize that if you want.
Yeah.
Okay. So here's my creative process, right? I have an idea. It gets put in my phone, in a memo, a note memo. Okay. By the end of the week, that's long. I add to the same memo. So it's thousands and thousands of characters, but just every week you add stuff to the memo. And at the end of the week, you're going to take each of those ideas, go back through. And if it's something that you think is not just a one-off thought, you're going to think about it for a few minutes and expand on it. Maybe it was a one sentence thing. You're going to expand on it and write something that's a little bit longer and make it a full-fledged sentence, something that you could then like send to somebody and it would make sense to them. A lot of my things are literally 7 words long and only make sense to me, right? Once you have a paragraph or so, it can be as long as you want, for each of them, that gets put into a notebook at the end of each week. And the reason I do this is I find when I don't put things in a notebook, technology fails, right? There's systems where it doesn't, but it has to me. I've lost things on a hard drive, right? So I know that feeling. I know I can't rely on technology 100%, like 99%, but not 100. So everything goes in a notebook. This also means that years down the road, I may find one of these notebooks, open it and flip through and find something cool, right? I also find if you only write it in a notebook or you start by writing it in a notebook, there's this subconscious feeling of you're locked in now. You've written it down. If you write it with a pen or a pencil, you're kind of locked in. It's stuck permanently on a page. When it's digital, it's very easy to edit and much easier to just write up a sentence or two and make it make sense, right? So that's why I do that. It starts on the phone, it gets edited, and then it goes in a notebook in a full-fledged sentence. And then that can be added to, you can write more on it. I usually use about 1 page per idea, so you can fill the entire page with drawings and other things about that idea. And then at the end of the month, I take every idea that I have put in the notebook, not my phone, because not everything in the phone goes into the notebook. Everything in the notebook goes, and I film 1 long YouTube video with all of the ideas compiled. I literally sit down with my notebook in front of my phone, I hit record, and I go through each idea. I kind of talk out loud, I narrate what it was that I wrote down, and then I kind of work on that idea out loud a little bit. You will find it's like a mini jam session, so to speak, right? You will find that a lot of times the things you do in that time period are where the actual idea is developed. And that, when you're jamming on it, number one, it's recorded, you can reference it. Number two, it's just so refreshing to be able to actually work on an idea that's now like a thought out idea rather than just a thought. Yeah. And then that video gets uploaded privately to YouTube and tagged with every method that's used in the video and any custom tags that I have set. And what this does is if you're persistent with this method over a year, you will have a library of methods that are completely your own that you can search if you need a method. So if I'm working on a project and I look, I need a method that does A, B, C, and D. I go onto my channel, I type in those keywords. So maybe it's double backer, reference smooth, and whatever. It'll give me a list of the videos and it'll link to every method that has that. And I'm able to rewatch my own ideas. Maybe it sparks something new. Maybe it's not exactly what I need. But now I have my entire, every magic thought I have put in a beautiful portfolio, not for anyone else to see, just you, that you can reference in the future. And that is worth more than any magic trick you can buy, because they're your own ideas and you can reference them wherever and whenever you want. So that's my process. Sorry, that was a little bit long, but that's what I have felt.
I'm fascinated. I mean,
yeah,
it's very organized. Like very
a little bit, a little bit.
I mean, I mean, wow. That's, I mean, I've never seen or heard of a system like that before. It's genius. It really is. I love the fact that you're building up a library. Let me ask you a question. So how many of you say, hey, every week you're going to have a really long notes page, and that's then transcribed into a notebook, and that eventually goes on YouTube. Mm-hmm. How many things are you working on in any given time period then? Because if it's a fairly long notebook, notes page on your phone, there's going to be a few things there, but that's every week. Like, I find, like, as a creator, if I use a slightly different method. I have a whiteboard in front of me and I work off a whiteboard, but I have probably 10 or 15 things that I'm working on at any given time. If I'm working on more than sort of 10 or 15 things, I just end up being almost scatterbrained. Like, it's like, oh, I'm bouncing around from one place to another place and I'm not really fully giving 100% to one thing. But it sounds like you're working on like 5,000 things at the same time. Like,
not quite 5,000. And that's part of the method, or part of the channeling it through the different things, is so you're not working on 5,000 things, because when you read through that note, you're going to read something and go, okay, that's cool, but that's not something I can, like, maybe it's a stage illusion. Like, okay, that's a cool idea, but I don't know how that would work. I don't know when that would work. And that's like very specific to one thing that could ever work, right? Maybe in the future you can use it, but at the time it's not something I would use. So that doesn't even go in the notebook. So the hope is you kind of channel all of your brain matter from your phone into a more digestible notebook. And then that notebook is getting put on YouTube. For me personally, I say I'm working on about 5 or 6 projects at a time. Any more than that, I just physically don't have the time. I could probably work on 10 at a time, but then none of them would get the proper attention and time needed to be fully developed. There's an old thing where it's like, yeah, you can work on 10 things at once, and you would end up at year 10 with 10 fully fledged ideas you could launch, or you could focus on one idea a year, and you could do that every single year. And by year 10, you will still have the same amount of ideas, but each and every one will be the best it can be. I'm not quite that extreme, but it's just a thought process. You know, I try and limit myself to the amount of things I work on. And then sometimes you work on things and you just realize it's not working out, or it's not what you thought it was. Some things you start thinking you have no idea how it's going to work, and it works out beautifully. So that can also narrow stuff down. You can start and then get rid of half the projects you were working on and, you know, start new ones. I find any more than about 5 or 6, I just start, like you said, scatterbrained. It kind of just doesn't work with me.
Wow. And what do you do if you've got an idea that you're really, really excited with? You know, you've got this thing, it's gone into your notes page. You're like, oh my God, this is amazing. And it's gone into your notebook. You're working on it. But then all of a sudden you hit a mental blank, you hit a wall, and you can't get past this thing to make it work. And you've tried everything. Do you put a pin in it? Do you take it away for a bit? Or do you carry on working on that idea?
I don't know. It kind of depends on the project. Some things are like, this isn't working. I need to buy X, Y, and Z to test it. It has to ship from Germany, so we're going to have to wait a month and a half. So that's kind of like putting a pin in it until that comes in.
Yeah.
Some things, there's one project I'm working on now that requires a mechanism that I have no idea how to make, not a clue, and I've never seen anything like it. So I'm not an engineering major. I don't know how to make it. And it's not just, I could make a big version. It needs to be tiny, and I don't know how to do that. That's what I'm struggling with. So it's going to kind of go on the back burner. I keep a page. I should mention, and we can go over, even my notebook is different than most notebooks. But my notebook has kind of a page of what I'm actively working on. So it kind of just puts a little star next to it. Just kind of like, yeah, put a pin in that. We'll wait. Sometimes I'll be scrolling through YouTube and I'll find, it's the weirdest thing. Ideas jump out in the weirdest spots. I mean, you're watching a YouTube video on something random, like film theory or whatever it is. And somebody says something, or there's a visual graphic on the screen and the solution just pops into your head. And it's just like, you reach 5 years ago, you pull something back and you're like, there's the idea. That's how it's going to work. So there's a little bit of that that happens sometimes. I put something on the back burner and then, yeah, it kind of clicks. And then I'm like, great, I can now finish this and get it off my plate. So there's that that happens. But yeah, some things just don't work out. Like there were one or two projects I was so excited about. And I was so excited about them that I failed to see that from someone else's perspective, it wasn't good. It just wasn't as impressive because I know the methods I'm using. I know the time I put into it. Somebody who hasn't seen any of that looks at it and goes, yeah, I mean, it's good, but it's just whatever. And when about five or six people tell you that, it's like, okay, maybe this is not exactly what I thought it was. Other times things just don't work out mechanically. That happens a lot, where you picture something in your head and you know, make the part and it just, there's no way for it to work without spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to buy some machining, whatever. So it does happen, and it's really sad when it does, but there's also a little bit of happiness because I know that I can officially shelve that product, or not product, but like project, and start working on something new. So that's nice. It kind of ebb and balance.
Wow. And we've talked a lot about playing cards, and obviously your first major release was Boombox. Have you do you create stuff outside of playing cards as well, or is that kind of your main genre?
I wish you could see my desk right now. No, a lot of the things that I create are not playing cards. Okay. It just so happened that that trick that I showed David and so many people liked was, it was a coincidence that happened to be a trick with a deck of cards. I do say I perform mostly card stuff just because it is what I'm comfortable, what I've grown up with. Only within the past 7 years or so have I started doing things with other items, coins, cards, cards, money. I find there's a lot of really cool ideas outside of your traditional magic. So things with Sharpies, things with crayons, things with whatever it may be. I would say when I perform, it's mostly card stuff, cards, coins, or physical magic, which sounds weird, but I'm like things like Double Cross or things like, you know, that type of style where you're not really using anything. I love that. Coin bends, that type of thing. But yeah, when I create, I actually find it the hardest to just create card magic. Just doesn't work. I don't know why, but create, like, sit down, create a card trick, I could not do. I could do it over time, but it's not as easy as sitting down and coming up with some other wacky idea.
Wow. Wow. Okay. And do you ever, one last question about creativity. Do you ever how do you deal with having a mental blank or a lack of inspiration, or half of the battle with creativity is coming up with the initial idea, and that's the thing that a lot of people struggle with. They just sit there for hours and go, well, you know what, I can't think of anything. It's like, how do I come up with that initial idea? So I suppose two questions on this: how do you come up with that initial idea, how do you find that inspiration, and how do you deal with it if nothing's forthcoming and you're just sitting there like just staring at a table with stuff on it and nothing's coming to fruition?
Yeah, I think that kind of comes back to what I said before. Let me put it this way: creativity, it is a mindset. You can't just sit down and go, all right, I'm going to be creative, I'm going to create the next best thing with these seven objects. What am I going to do? Like, some people can, but I can't. All right. My desk is always full with whatever my active projects are. Literally, right now I have within arm's reach probably, yeah, all of the things that I'm actively working on. What that does is A, creates a messy desk, but B, it allows those things to be out in my vision every day. And I'm seeing them used in different ways. If I see something in the world that I think is good and like something I'm able to like purchase or take home, maybe it's a logo on a flyer, it gets put in a box. And that box is all of the ideas that I've had that I actually can physically like grasp. So if I ever need an idea for something, I can just kind of go through that box and maybe something will pop out. But a lot of times I find it's a random thing that just pops in my head. I see something and it just pops in my head. And that's all it takes. It takes the tiniest detail for you to put it in your phone, and then that gets put in your thing and then put in on YouTube. And then at that point, it's like, yeah, okay, now I have a clear direction of where to go. If you're struggling with mental, like creative block, I highly recommend you finding friends that are not only like good friends, but good people and good magicians and people who are creative. Surrounding myself with creative people boosts my creativity. I'm not saying for you to go take their ideas. Please don't do that. But seeing how other people think, seeing what other people come up with allows me to then, oh, cool, this person's working on this and this person's working on this, and hey, I'm working on this. If you don't have that, and there's nothing wrong with it, but I find when I surround myself with other creative people, it doesn't have to be people. It can be films, it can be music. I listen to music when I create. Anything that gets some kind of emotional response from you as an individual, I find is very, very strong to be able to unlock that creativity. Does that answer the question?
Does. It definitely does. Yeah. That's great. And on the subject of friends, as you brought that up, how can you find a group of people that you can trust? Because we always hear it, can't we? Oh, so and so took my idea. I mean, what is there any advice on that?
It's difficult, and it's one of those things that's going to be up to you, right? You got to pick your friends wisely. You can't just go off showing your stuff to everybody. If you don't care if it's taken, then that's fine. You're free to do that. But if if you show any single person or you're posting it publicly on Facebook or whatnot, there is going to be one person that sees it who is not creative, somebody who is does not have their own ideas. And but somebody who wants to be in the spotlight, they're going to see that and say, that's really good, I'm taking it.
Yeah.
And it's sad when it happens because you're like, well, yeah, I got ripped off. For me at least, it's a little bit of the like, imitation is the biggest form of flattery. Like, really? Somebody thought my idea was good enough to steal? That's awesome. Like, I don't really care. But yeah, finding friends that you can trust is not easy because sadly this world there's not many. But you'll know when you find someone. I wouldn't go off telling them. I mean, even my closest friends, I would never tell some things, right? Like personal details. But I really don't have an answer, I guess. It's just you got to find the right kind of people. Once you get along with the person, you guys think on the same wavelength, you guys have similar ideas. Or your polar opposites, just somebody you can vibe with and you know that you're not going to get, there's no beef between you. I don't know. It just, you'll know when you can trust someone. And it's something that is personal to the situation and the person. But if the question is more like, what do I do not to get my stuff stolen? Don't go posting it publicly, please. Like there is a point where you should get a little bit of traction on it to see if people like that. But that traction should come from your close friends because that also doubles as you know they're not going to take it and you know they're going to tell you if they think it's crap.
Yeah.
It's they're going to straight up say that was awful. That I hate that. That's stupid, right? And people who aren't your close friends may actually lie and say, "Oh, that's great." So not to hurt your feelings. And not in magic, but that in general is one of the worst things in creativity because people don't want to hurt your feelings. So they tell you something is good, a lot of people can tell you something is good and it's not. And that is, you know, with a close friend, somebody who you know you can trust, that won't happen.
That's great. That's fantastic. I have one last question, which is about performing. Now, you mentioned that pre-COVID, before COVID, you were performing a lot more than you are now, and now you're primarily a creator. I've got two questions on that. The first question is, and this is a question that's come up on my channel a lot, so I want to ask you, how important is it to go out and regularly perform in a gigging situation to be an effective creator? Like for me, I know it's different for each individual creator, but for me, I perform a lot. So going back to Boombox, when I was working on ideas with Boombox, I was going out and taking them out every night. I was like coming up with the ideas. I was like, right, okay, I'm going to go to a gig and I'm going to do this one, this one, this one. And I'd come back and I'd be like, right, okay, that didn't work. Why did that not work? And it was that experience of working that in that allowed me to kind of go, right, okay. And the whole project, or at least from my point of view, from the routines that I developed for it, was so much better because I went out and worked it than if I'd just kind of gone, right, okay, I think this is going to work, or I'd ask somebody else to work it for me. So do you think you can be, I mean, you are a successful creator and you don't perform that much, but what advice have you got for people, like, and in terms of that sort of creating performing side of, you know, you understand what I'm trying to say? I'm trying to say how important is being a performer when you're creating magic?
It, for me at least, it is a connection with your audience. Okay. You don't have to perform 10,000 hours to be considered a good performer. Twofold to that is I've seen people who have performed 10,000 hours and they perform on cruise ships and they make a lot of money in magic. They're not good performers. They're just not, right? They do their job well, but they're just not good at interacting with people. And I've seen the reverse of that. People who are not paid to do it and they do it for fun and they're amazing with people and kids and stuff. So it is important for the trick. I'll put it that way. If you want your idea, right? Let's say you have an idea, you've created it, you've pitched it, you've gotten a yes, right? Perform it for everyone. Perform it for your family. Perform it for your friends. Go out on the street and perform it. Perform it for your barista that when, you know, when they make your drink, right? Don't make it weird, but try and perform it if it can be performed, because that is how you're going to get the, that's how you're going to get the exposure, the trick, not yourself, that you need to, like you said, with Boombox, like, hey, this worked, this didn't, how are we going to do that? If you don't, and you can, people do not perform their things and just kind of release it without any street test, you run the risk of releasing something that looks really good, but isn't good for your audience. And this is something that when I had this thought, it ruined me. I hated it. I have to stop like performing magic that I like. I need to start performing magic my audience is like, right? I could have the coolest trick in the world, coolest, most high-tech method. It cost me $7,000. But at the end of the day, if I have to deal the deck out into 17 different piles, I might not want to perform that for my audience because they're going to get bored, right? So it's that kind of thing. Yes, it might be a good idea. Let your audience decide. If you're getting crazy reactions, then you're golden. I think performers, especially pro performers like yourself, have the ability to take even a children's trick and make it look great. I guarantee you, if you went to your local magic shop and got a kid's trick, Craig, and performed it for your audience, you could find a handling that would blow your audience out of the water, right? So part of that is being a good performer, right? And that does come with experience, but also just being a friend to your audience. Don't make this, I'm a magician, I'm higher than you, right? Like, don't do that. Just be a human with your audience and treat them like, I try and treat my audience like they're friends, like I know them really well. And I find when you do that, when you treat them like you know them really well, no matter how awkward the situation is, they like to, like, they grow on you. Like, they love you. They love what you're doing and they get accustomed to you as a performer, which means when you perform, you're not getting an awkward, oh, that was really good, right? You're getting crazy reactions for stuff. So it's twofold. I think you have to have the experience, but you also don't have to be a full-time performer to go out and do a trick. You can do it anywhere. You just want to get that, the knowledge base for the effect of, hey, this works really well, or hey, this could use some work.
And that's the advantage, I suppose, of working with, if somebody's watching this and they're not a natural performer, and you know, there are people out there like that, when you work with a company, depending on the company, you'll get help with that. Like I've seen many, many times Penguin bring out a trick and you've got Nick or you've got Eric doing the performances of the trick. I've seen Murphy's bring out a trick and they've got Javier doing the same thing. So, you know, I suppose working with a company, you have the advantage of tapping into their resources as well.
100%. And it's, that is such a cool thing that those companies offer. Because yeah, you get the experience for the trick. You can see if it's good or not, and you don't have to do it. And on that note, I know creators who don't perform like professionally at all, but they perform more than some professional magicians. And it's kind of sad to be honest, but it just depends on the person. If performing's not your thing, create. And if you create good stuff, people will like it and buy it and to perform it, right? It's just a natural thing. So I would also say with experience, there comes a point where you can just tell how your audience would react to it. And then that can kind of help vet if it's a good idea or not. Yeah.
It's great advice. Fantastic. Really, really good. I got one final question, and this has been a fascinating interview. You're 19. You only just got started. Are there any goals that you want to hit within the magic community? What's on your magical bucket list that you want to hit in the next sort of 5 to 10 years? You have anything that you kind of go, you know what? I want that.
That is a great question. What would I do? The main thing is meeting great people. That's what I love. I love about this community is so many amazing people work in it. And getting the opportunity to work with some of those people would be really cool. So meeting wonderful, awesome people in this community is one thing that I'm looking forward to. Helping people is something else. I love helping people and being able to see an idea turn into an effect, turn into a full-on release. That's awesome. Personal things, probably at one point do a lecture. To kind of expand on all of this and help some people out and kind of create a lecture that I wish I had when I first got started that I never had. Maybe write a book, who knows? Get some of my other ideas out there. But yeah, there's no big performing at the Magic Castle would be cool, but hey, maybe one day. It's not something I'm gonna work super duper hard towards, or maybe I will. Maybe I'll change my mind on that. But yeah, it comes down to meeting really cool people and working with people. That's what it comes down to.
That's amazing. Andrew, this has been an incredible interview. It really has. Yeah. I've been super excited about interviewing you right, you know, from when we organized it last week. And yeah, it hasn't disappointed. You are I don't want to say you're a rising star because you've risen. You're a star in this industry. And I know that people are going to be seeing big things from you. If people want to connect with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Reach out on Instagram or Facebook, honestly. You can find me on there, Andrew Niner, Neiner. And yeah, shoot me a message. I'd love to see what you guys are working on. I'd love to be able to interact with you and maybe make a new friend. I'm always open.
That's amazing. So if somebody's got an idea and they want somebody who can, they can sound off with it, are you happy for them to contact you?
100%, yes.
Amazing. So, you know what, Andrew, thank you again so much for finding the time to come on the channel. I really appreciate it. This has genuinely been a masterclass. The advice that you shared, I hope anybody who's really even half interested in creating has listened to this and goes back and listens to it again, because your advice has been absolutely golden. And what I want everyone to do who's listening to this right now is go down to the comments, leave a comment, let Andrew know what you thought. And then while you're at it, click over to Penguin Magic and buy Boombox if it's not out of stock like it normally is. because it really is one of the best tricks of 2022. And you'll have a blast, an absolute blast performing it. And I cannot wait to see with what comes next, because I know whatever it is, it's going to be amazing. And I hope at some point down the line, I get to work with you again. But Andrew, thank you so much. One more time. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. I appreciate you having me on the channel. Thank you very much.
No problem. Guys, on behalf of Andrew Niner, thank you very much for checking out this Talk Magic. I'll be back soon with another video. I'll be back next Saturday with another Talk Magic. But I'm Craig, this is Andrew, and this was a Talk Magic. See you again soon right here on Magic TV.
Thanks for listening to the Talk Magic Podcast.
Magic, magic.
Be
magic.
Sure to like and subscribe to the Magic TV YouTube channel.
Magic TV.
Which includes 14 unique videos every week. Whatever type of magic you're interested in, we've got you covered. Just search YouTube for Craig Petty's Magic TV, or click on the link in the description from this podcast below. Be sure to join us next Friday at 5 p.m. right here for another Talk Magic Podcast.